Turn here on the second to last line in Yud Ted Amud Bet. Amar Rav Mari, Shma Mino. From our Mishnah that you can conclude, Chulin Shinasu Al Tarat HaKodesh KeKodesh Domu. That Chulin, that is, kept based on the levels of Tumah, carefulness, appropriateness of Kodesh, will have the same status as Kodesh. Our Mishnah gives gradations of Tahara that one could keep, and each one of them is not good enough for the other gradation of Tahara. But if you were to practice with Chulin, which is the lowest form of Tahara that the Mishnah mentions, but if you kept practices there like you would do by Kodesh, then it would maintain the same level as Kodesh, and you wouldn't have to do any changing or have any problems of keeping those two items together or worried about any Tumah because it wasn't done properly for Kodesh. You can maintain Kodesh even in other areas. Mimai, where from our Mishnah do you see that? Melo Tani Behu Male? Is it because it doesn't give you any gradation? I mean, it lists in the Mishnah all these different areas. It says Chulin, Maser, Tumah, Kodesh, Chatat. But it doesn't list the level of Chulin, Shnasu Al Tarat Kodesh. By the fact that it doesn't mention that level, that indicates that that level is not differentiated in any way. Where it says, Bodilma Hai Delok Tani Behu Male, the reason that it's not mentioned as a separate category in the Mishnah is, Di Domu De Truma Hatani Truma. It could be similar to Truma, and Truma is already mentioned in the Mishnah. Vi Domu De Chulin Hatani De Chulin. And if it's similar to Chulin, our Mishnah also mentions that gradation of Chulin. You might be right that Chulin Shanasu Al Tarat HaKodesh fits into one of the categories of the Mishnah, but how do you know which category it fits into? You're assuming it fits into Kodesh. Maybe it fits into Truma. Maybe it fits into Chulin. And why would you think that? The Tanya, we have a Braita. Chulin Shinasu Al Tarat HaKodesh. Chulin items that are kept at the level of Tara that Kodesh normally would be kept. Hariyankin Chulin. So here you have a Tana Kabu says they have a status like Chulin. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok Omer Hariyankin Truma. They have a din like Truma. So you see over here, you have a Braita with two opinions. One that says it's Chulin, one that says it's Truma. Nobody says it's Kodesh in this Braita. We have other places when we know that they say that it is Kodesh. But nevertheless, you can't prove anything from the Mishnah by the mere fact that it leaves out Chulin Shnasu El Tarat HaKodesh. It fits into some other category. You just don't know which category that is. Ela Misefa. We can learn out of the latter half of the Mishnah, which is Yosef ben Yoezer Haya Chassid Shebikuna. He was one of those righteous of the Kuna. Vaita mitpachto midras the Kodesh. And his mitpachat was considered to be midrash v'kodesh. Yochanan ben Gudgoda Haya Uchel Al Tarat HaKodesh. He used to eat Chulin Al Tarat HaKodesh. Kol Yomav his whole life. Vaita mitpachto midras lechatat. And his mitpachat, his handkerchief, was only a problem for people who were keeping Tarat of Chatat, of the Paraduma, the highest level. The Chatat in, the Kodesh low. But for people keeping Kodesh, he was totally fine. So you see here from the latter half of the Mishnah, there's an indication that Yochanan ben Gudgoda, who kept Chulin al Tarat Kodesh, that was considered to be on the level of Kodesh, and was only problematic for the level above that. The only level above that is Chatat, but at its pure level, meaning at the Kodesh level, it was not an issue. Alma, from this you can conclude from our Mishnah, Kasavra Chulin Shinasu Adarat HaKodesh Ke Kodesh Domo. And that's where the statement of Rav Mari comes from our Mishnah. He's able to infer from the Mishnah that Chulin that is done Al Tarat HaKodesh had a status like Kodesh. Now we have a number of statements, and the Gemara is going to then work or challenge those statements. Amar Rabbi Yonatan ben Elazar, Nafla me'afarto himenu, if his smock or his cape fell off of him, Amar lechaveiro, and he asks his friend over there, Tna li, pass it over to me, v'natnalo, and that's exactly what he did, Tmeya, now it is Tmeya. So all that happened was that his piece of clothing fell off, and he asked someone else to pass it to him. Amar Rabbi Yonatan ben Amram, Nitchalfu lo kelim shel Shabbat bekelim shel Chol. If his clothing got mixed up, he thought he was going to wear clothing that was Chol, and instead he ended up taking out his Shabbat clothing from his closet. Instead of taking out the weekday white shirt, he took out the Shabbat white shirt. He got confused, and now he's wearing the clothing that he had not expected to wear. vilabshan, and when he wears them, nitmu, they become tameh. And now the last case here. Amar Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok, masa b'shtei nashim chaverot. Two women who are both chaverot, not friends here, but keeping the tara like chaver does. These are women who are chaverim, they're called chaverot. Shinit chafulen klehen bebeit amerchatz. When they went to the bathhouse, they had certain utensils that got mixed up or exchanged. Could be clothing, could be anything. Anything that they had. Clothing, utensils, anything that they were working with that were otherwise considered to be tahor because they are chaverot. And then ba maase lifnei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva gets the question now, what's the story with them? Vitim'an. And he made whatever was exchanged tamei. The presumption of the Gemara in these three cases is that when someone else interacts with your object, it automatically becomes tamei. You lose control over the object. Someone else has interacted with it, and therefore it's considered to be a hesek hadat. It's as if you've lost your focus on the object, and now it takes on tuma. One of the ways you can get tuma is through hesek hadat. If you stop focusing on an object, the object loses its coverage as being tahor. So the assumption here is that as soon as it gets into someone else's hands, you almost relinquish control. And as soon as you relinquish control, it's as if you have hesek hadat, and then it becomes tamei. Not because it became tamei, but simply because you're not focused on it anymore. The assumption is that unless you're protecting the object, then there's a likelihood that tuma could have come. And unless you are certain there's no tuma, we're going to assume there is tuma. So there is a certain amount of default that we're saying that is tuma. It's not necessarily that it's really tamei. It would only be tamei midirabanan. These levels, these hierarchies that are mentioned in the Mishnah are all levels dirabanan, not deoraita. But again, midirabanan, we kept these certain extra levels of tahara. Those extra levels of tahara require a certain amount of interaction with the object. Now, so matkif la Rav Hoshaya. So Rav Hoshaya challenges this. He says, Elamiato, if you're going to go this far, Hoshit Yado L'sal, what happens if he sticks his hand into the basket? Lito patchitin. His intention was to take out a wheat loaf of bread. Valtav Yado patzorim. Instead, he ended up with barley bread. Hachanami didn't mate. You're going to tell me also that that means that it's tamei? So you're saying to me, if you get the wrong thing, the object that comes to you, if it's the wrong item, or you didn't think that was the item that was coming to you, then it's tamei. So over here too, you swapped out, you thought this piece of food or this loaf of bread was coming to you, you get another loaf of bread, tamei? It says, v'chitei ma'achanami. If you want to say, yeah, you know what? That is the case. It says, v'atanya. That's not the case because I have a breita. Ha'mishameret ha'chavit b'chezkat shel yayin. Person's guarding a barrel, assuming that there is wine in the barrel. V'nimtzei shel shemen. And in the end, it turns out it was oil instead of wine. Tehora milutamei. It's tahor from conveying tuma to anything else. So here you see that even though there was a mix-up in what you were watching, nevertheless, it maintained its level of tahara. Gemara says, v'litameich. According to your reasoning, ema seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half of that braita, which says, v'asura mele'echol. You're not allowed to eat it. Which indicates that, yes, it might be tahor, which means that it will not convey tuma, but it also might be pasul. It might have become pasul, which means that it accepted tuma, just cannot convey the tuma. So that means it does get ruined by this fact that you exchanged it. So am I? Why should it be, according to you, why should it be asur lechol? So Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, so Rabbi Yirmiya explains this, be'omer, shmeratia midavar ha-mitam'a, velo midavar ha-posla. When I guarded it, when I had in mind to protect it from becoming tamei, I protected it from taking on a level of tuma that would convey tuma to something else, but I did not protect it from it itself becoming tamei. This is a term, you should just know, the Mishnah uses these terms as well, the Gemara uses all the time. Anything, something is tamei, that means that not only is it itself tamei, it has the ability to convey tuma to something else. Pasul means that it is tamei, but does not have the ability to convey tuma any longer. It ruins itself, but cannot convey tuma. I mean, you've reached the end of the line of tuma for this category. So for instance, in truma, once you've reached a shlishi of the tuma is pasul by truma, because that's the end of the line for truma. It will not convey tuma any further within the world of truma. Maybe not even the world of Kodesh. But at least within the world of truma, it won't convey tuma. In Kodesh, a shlishi of the tuma, third level tuma, would still be tamei, because you can make a revi'i in Kodesh. Only a revi'i would be pasul in Kodesh, because that's the end of the line. So here, when he says, I watched it, I watched it from becoming a level of tuma that it would become tamei and be able to convey tuma. But I didn't guard it against it itself becoming tamei, that it itself becoming pasul. I says, Miika ni teruta lepalga. So what is like half guarding? I mean, can you have something like this where I kind of watched it, I didn't totally watch it? How do you have such a manifestation? The Gemara says, in. Vatanyo. It's true. And we have a braita that supports it, which is, Oshit yado basal, basalak tefo. Puts his hand into the basket, and he is carrying the basket on his shoulder. Vamagrefa betochasal. And he has a shovel, it's really a scraper that is inside the basket. Vayabili bol asal. Vayabili bol ala magrefa. And he was focused on the basket, meaning guarding the basket and taking care of it, but not on the scraper. Hasal tohor, vamagrefa tmea. Then the basket remains tohor because he, quote unquote, guarded it from tuma. That's fine. The magrefa, the scraper, becomes tamei because he didn't focus on it. He wasn't protecting the scraper. So now, asal tohor, why should the sal be tohor? Titamei, but magrefa, la sal. Why should it not become tamei? You have a magrefa, you have a kli in there that's tamei. It's sitting inside of the basket. So why doesn't it convey tuma from the scraper to the basket? It says, in kli, mitamei kli. No problem there. You can't convey tuma from one utensil to another utensil. That just doesn't work. And because of that, you don't have a problem. Everyone says, okay. Vilitamei masha basal. Why don't we say whatever's in the basket becomes tamei? You have a basket. You have the scraper in the basket. Plus you have, we're going to see here that we also have dates in the basket. So if you have food that's inside the basket, at least the food should become tamei from the scraper being in contact with them. Amaravina. Beomer shmertiv midavar shmitamo, velo midavar haposlo. So he says exactly what we described before. He guarded the scraper from becoming tamei, which means that it will not convey tuma to other objects, but he did not protect it against it becoming pasul, against it itself becoming problematic. So what happened here was he guarded the basket. Basket's totally fine. The dates that are inside, he's got his eye on those, but the shovel or the scraper that he has inside became pasul, but not tamei. That means that it reached a level of tumah where it will not convey, won't ruin the dates, will not ruin the basket, but it itself will be problematic. And that's what's described here in the braita. That's this idea that you have to be actively engaged with the object, protect it from tumah, in order for it not to get tumah. So over here, since he didn't focus on the scraper, he wasn't actively guarding the scraper, it becomes tamei. Not because it really is tamei, it's tamei because of these levels that the Rabbanan set up, that if you don't guard it, if you don't protect it at this level of tahara, then it automatically, because of hesek hadat, because you forgot about it, it becomes tamei automatically. But the whole point of bringing this braita down is simply to show us, there, conceptually, there's this idea that you can protect something from certain levels of tuma, even though you're not protecting from other levels of tuma. You can have this half guarding or half watching of items. You can protect items from becoming tamei, even though you're not protecting them from becoming pasul. Mikom makom kasha. Nevertheless, now that we got this far down, now we have a problem. We still have a problem, which is the question that was raised over here from the braita that says that it's tahor militamei. The case where you thought it was wine, turns out it's shemen. There the braita said that it doesn't have a problem. That shows you just because the object that you took out is not the object you thought, doesn't mean it automatically loses its coverage. It doesn't automatically mean there's hesek hadat over here. What you're stating is exactly Rabbi Shaya's question. He's challenging all the statements we had before, which seem to indicate that that's just not true. We had three statements that say that what you just said is not true, and Rabbi Shaya says, I have a braita that seems to indicate that that is true, what you're saying. So, makom makom kasha, va'od motiv rabo baravua. And we have another challenge here from Rabbi Baravua. Masib isha achat, shabat lifnei Rabbi Ishmael. Woman who came before Rabbi Ishmael, amra lo, Rabbi, beged ze aroktiv bitara. I wove this beged, Bitara. Bitara. I know for certain that it didn't become tamei, but I didn't have in mind when I was doing this to protect it from the tuma. So I didn't do what's supposed to be done, I guess, on the level of the Rabbonon, which is that I had active engagement with the object, saying I'm protecting it from tara. But after the fact, I know now that it never touched anything that was tamei. So therefore, it should be tahor just by the fact that nothing touched it. Umitoch bidikot. Rabbi Shmuel then spends time with this woman trying to investigate the situation. Shaya Rabbi Shmuel Bodka, when he was checking her, Amra lo Rabbi, Nida Mashcha imi bachevel. Oh, finds out, a Nida was involved in the process. A Nida pulled one of the strings for me, And, well, now we have a problem because Anida got involved. So she tied one of the strings in the setup of the weave or the setup in the loom. She did something that caused a contact between the Nida and the object itself or the weave that was being done over here. And maybe, we don't know for certain, just because she touched the string doesn't mean it's Tamei. Because the string is not a kli to become Tamei. It's only if she did something that moved the beged or the weave that was there already, that was existing as a beged, did it cause something. But Mami, that's what Rashi says, Shema Hisito. Maybe she moved it. Maybe she shook the loom or did something that caused her to convey Tuma to the beged. Amar Rabbi Shmuel, Kama Gdolim Divrei Chachamim. How great are the words of the Chachamim? Shayu Omrim Bilibo L'Shomro Tahor. If a person says he's going to watch it from Tahara or from Tuma, really, then it works. Ein Bilibo L'Shomro Tamei. If you don't have this active engagement with the object, it's not automatically Tahor. Because exactly this incident. This incident says when you're not actively engaged, you forget about things. Things slip. And Tuma gets in there without you thinking about it. When you're actively engaged, you make sure that the object remains Tahor. And that's what the idea here is. To be actively engaged makes you ensure that there's nothing that even comes close to making it Tamei. Whereas when you're not actively engaged, there's a possibility something got in around you or you just didn't focus on it. Shuv ma'aseh isha achat sheba lifnei Rabbi Shmuel. Again, another incident with a woman coming for Rabbi Shmuel. Amar lo Rabbi, mapazu aragtia b'tahara. This cloth, whatever it is, I wove it and it was Tahor. Again, the same thing, but Tara, I didn't have this in mind to keep it, to guard it. Again, he asked questions, he tried to figure out what happened. One of the strings of the weave snapped. And I tied it with my mouth. I put it into my mouth, I held it in my mouth, and then I tied it up. What went wrong here? What's the problem she put in her mouth? Rashi brings two interpretations. He brings his own interpretation and an interpretation of his Rebbeim. He says that his Rebbeim explained that the problem is tzinorot amaretz hamitama. That any spittle, any saliva of an amaretz is automatically tamei, tumat ava tuma, tumat azav, tumat amidras, as long as it's wet. So as long as it's still moist, it has a problem. Rashi rejects that explanation because he says, if she really is an Amaretz, why is she coming to speak to Rabbi Shmuel to talk about Tuma and Tahara? The fact that she engages in a conversation about Tuma and Tahara already means she's not an Amaretz, she must be a Chavira. So Rashi rejects that explanation for that reason, and he explains that this, before I got to the weaving, before I actually made it into a beged, I had to tie one of the strings that had snapped. So I knotted the string before it ever became a beged. Then I began to weave, and I reached the minimum standard for a beged, whether it's shlosh by shlosh etzbaot, or shlosha by shlosha tefachim, whatever the minimum ariga would be to make this item be able to be mekabel tuma. At that point, the fear is that it was still wet. If it's still wet at that point in time, then the tuma will be conveyed to the object because of the moisture, the leicha that is there, and she was a nida at the time that the string had snapped, and she had put it in her mouth. So the moist spittle or saliva that she left on the string, if it was still moist once she had woven the beged, then it would convey tuma to the beged because it was still there, because it's roka nida, which would make it into an ava tuma. Roka nida is ava tuma, and that would be a problem for the beged. So that's the way Rashi explains it over here. And again, we have Rabbi Shmuel stating how great are the words of Chachamim Shomrim, be the bold of Shomro Tahor. As long as he had in mind to guard it, then it's Tahor because, again, you actively think about it and you think of all these scenarios and you're careful. But ain't be the bold of Shomro, you forget. Little things slip your mind. And when they slip your mind, it becomes Tamei even without you thinking about it, even though you think it's totally Tahor. And therefore, it's Tamei. So now, what is the question from here? The question from here is that it's clear, according to these statements by Rabbi Shmuel, that all it has to be is bilirbo l'shomro. As long as you intend to watch it, that is sufficient to protect it from tahara. Doesn't matter whether the object was switched, or was the right object, different object. As long as you had intention to guard it, that's enough to protect the tahara of the object. So then again, we're challenging those first three statements we had in the Gemara. First three statements are all the same when the object is switched, when somebody else gets involved, all these other items where we have all these qualifications about whether it works, Over here, we don't see that. Rabbi Shmuel simply says, bilibo. As long as you're guarding it, bilibo l'shomro, you're fine. It's not as compelling a question. The first question is much more compelling, because there the object did switch. But over here, the Gemara assumes that the fact that he just says that it is bilibo, that's enough that he's giving you the definition of what is sufficient to keep something tahor. Simply, if you want to watch it, that's enough. And we don't worry about it. You're right that you could argue that all his cases are different, and therefore it's not as relevant. Which is what the Gemara is basically saying is the Kavanah of Shmirah is all that counts. You're right that the cases by Rabbi Shmuel don't match up with the cases that we have before, and you could argue that's why it worked over here. So maybe it's not as strong a question, but it seems to be that he doesn't qualify it, and the Gemara assumes, based on that, that the first three statements are problematic. So now the Gemara goes back to each of those statements and says, Bishlama, the Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, the statement of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, which is the Maseh b'shtei Nashim, the two women who get their clothes or utensils mixed up. Kol achad v'achat omeret, chaverati eshet amaretz. They don't know the status of the other woman. So they assume that the other woman is just a wife of an amaretz, umaschad datamina, and therefore they relinquish any consideration of it. They think once it ended up with the other person, they say, oh gosh, I lost it because it went to an amaretz, now I'm going to have to start from scratch, and they stop keeping it in mind. So as soon as they stop keeping it in mind, then you have the hesek hadat that you need to make it tameh. So that we can answer that problem, no problem there. L'Rabbi Yonatan ben Amram, nami. According to Rabbi Yonatan ben Aram, who says that the case where you switched your Shabbat and chol clothing, came into kelim the Shabbat avidu shimur tfei. Since generally his Shabbat clothing, he does extra careful to watch them. Mesech date minayu. As soon as he figures out that there is chol clothing, he downgrades. And he says, ah, forget it. I don't need to. It wasn't what I was thinking. He intended to put on his chol clothing. He ended up with his Shabbat clothing. So then he doesn't watch it at the normal level he watches his Shabbat clothing. He watches it at the lower level. So again, he relinquishes a certain amount of focus on the beged that he normally would have because he realizes he made a mistake. And in realizing that he made the mistake, he removes his focus on the object, and that's what causes the problem. But the Rabbi Yonatan ben Elazar, who's the first statement, which is when his smock, his cape falls off and someone else picks it up from him, Naviduhu Shimur Biyadei Dechavrei. Why doesn't it automatically become a Shimur when the other person picks it up for him? Is it no hazakadak on the item, number one? Number two is, he wouldn't ask an Amaretz to pick up the beged. Why would he ask an Amaretz to pick up the beged? Then it wouldn't do anything for him. So he's obviously having a chaver pick it up. So why, when the other person picks it up, do we have a sudden problem here? So Gemara says, Amar Yochanan, chazakayin adam mishimer mashbiyad chaveril. This is the principle that's being established here, is that a person does not guard, or is not careful about something that is in the hands of another individual. And so that's important. The whole idea here, and it's borne out by the stories by Rabbi Shmuel. The woman over here is guarding something, but then she's not really focused on it. When she's not really focused on it, little things slip in. The same thing will be said about when it's in the hands of someone else. And it's true in general. When you know someone else is carrying something for you, taking something from you, you relinquish a certain amount of supervision over the object because you assume the other individual is doing it. And as soon as you do that, you have a problem of hesek hadat because you will not maintain the same level of carefulness, focus on the object, and that creates the problem over here. Which is, as soon as someone else engages in the object, you lose a certain amount of connection to the object, and that's what causes the tumah. Amar says below, is that really true? Is that really true that as soon as you relinquish control to someone else or to someone else's supervision, it's as if you have hesek hadat? V'atanyo, don't we have a brayta? Harei shaya chamarav upo'alav tu'anim te'arot. He has his haulers, his movers, and his workers that are carrying tarot for him. Afal pishi fligmehem, even though there is a gap that opens up between him and them in terms of the distance between them, yotermi mil, even more than a Roman mile, tarotav tarot, his tarot remain tarot, vi im amar lehem. On the other hand, if he says to them, the chu vani avo achareichem, go ahead and I'll catch up to you, kevin shenit almu enav, as soon as he loses sight of them, and tarotab tmeot, then his tarot are problematic. So Gemara here says, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seif. It's not clear that this is part of the Girsa. Both Rashi and Tosafot are mitlabet, waver on whether the Girsa is true, and they both basically re-explain it to give it. What's Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seif? The Mishnah already, or the Bright already explained to you what the difference is in the case. One case, he told them, basically he's going with them. The other case, he says, I'm catching up to you later. So I already explained to you the difference. What the Gemara is asking here is, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seif, is klomar velitamech. According to your reasoning, that as soon as you relinquish control to someone else, there's a problem. Why in the Reisha do we say there's not a problem? And in the Seifa you do say that. Seifa, I can explain why there's a problem. You relinquish control to the workers. But in the first case, why when you relinquish control, is there no problem? And that's what the Gemara is answering. And Amar Yitzchak, the Nafka, Reisha mitaher chamarav upolav. In the Reisha, he was mitaher, the workers and the haulers. I mean that he made everybody tahor. So since everybody's tahor, it doesn't matter that they came into contact with the object because they are tahor. So that's why, mitaher chamarav upolav, the kach, we don't have a problem. The Gemara says, well, yoch, it's seifanami. Well, that's really a great solution, but if that's the solution, then the Seifa should also be fine, because if he's mitaher them, doesn't matter that they touch the object. So it should be totally fine in the Seifa as well. Where it says, in an Aretz, makpida magach habeiro. That problem is that the Amaretz doesn't worry about his friend touching it. Fine, he'll touch it, but he's tahor, so we don't worry about him. But he won't worry about one of his buddies pulling up aside of him and touching the tarot, because he doesn't really focus on it. So Gemara says, well then, ihachi reishanami. If that's the case in the reisha, then why don't we say in the reisha, we also worry. He lost sight of them. And now the Amaretz's friend showed up and he touched it. If just like in the Seifa he could touch it, why can't he touch it in the reisha? So Gemara says, babalahem derech akalton. That he has a shortcut. He took a shortcut and he can catch up with them. Gemara says, ihachi seifa nami. So too in the Seifa. Kevin demadahu luchuva ni avacharechem, mismach samcha datayu. So here, the key element or the key difference between them is the instructions that he gives to them. In the first case, he does not instruct them anything. He just says, he follows them and slowly follows behind them. When he follows behind them, the Amaretz do not feel empowered to do whatever they want because they're always afraid he's going to show up. He could show up at any minute. He fell behind. He didn't tell them that he's not coming. He could take a shortcut, meet up with them. He could catch up with them. They're always afraid. That mirtat, that fear, is enough to prevent the problem from happening. In the latter case, he told them, go ahead and I'll catch up. By giving them the green light to go ahead and he'll catch up, then they already feel empowered because they assume he's not coming so fast. He will not be there, and they lose the aspect of mirtat here. They lose the aspect of being fearful. And since they lose the aspect of being fearful, they'll let their friend touch it. So that's the key difference between the Reish and the Seifa, is this element of mirtat, of fear. If there's fear there, fine, they touch it because they're tahor, but they won't let anybody else touch it because they know their owner might be up here and he's going to get upset if he catches them letting these things happen. When they know that the owner's far away, they're less worried about it. They let things slip. And since they let things slip, that's why you have a problem in the Seifa. Tosfot over here says something interesting. He says that even though they have mirtat only works with an amaretz if you mitire them. If you make them tahor and the mirtat together make it that your tahor remain tahor. Because number one, he'll touch it no matter what. That you can be guaranteed, he's going to touch it. So you have to make him tahor. For letting his friend touch it, you need the mirtat aspect of it. But then Tosfot says, Aval benachri, sagi b'derech ha-kalton lachud. By nachri, it's enough just to have mirtat, to have fear. By nachri, the nachri doesn't feel empowered to touch it. The Amaretz, since he's working with the chaver, the Amaretz assumes that he's good. And Amaretz always thinks of himself as being a chaver. He doesn't think he's problematic. It's only in the eyes of the chaver that the Amaretz is problematic. So if were not mitar the Amaretz, he would say, yeah, I'm just as good as this chaver, and he'll touch it without any problem. The Nachri knows that the Jew doesn't let him touch it, and since he doesn't let him touch it, he doesn't touch it. And he's fearful of touching it. So that's what Tosfot differentiates. He says, by a Nachri, mirtat is enough. Having a fear of the owner show up is enough to prevent him from touching it. By an Amaretz, he needs two things. He needs mirtat, plus he has to be tahor, because the Amaretz makes assumptions about his level of tahara, but he assumes that he's tahor. So since he assumes he's tahor, he'll touch it without any problem. Not even in the face of the owner, he'll touch it because he doesn't think he's tameh. Therefore, the owner has to make him tahor in order to protect his tarot. Plus, he needs mirtat to protect it from other people touching it. By nachri, you simply need mirtat. You simply need the fear of the owner showing up and he won't touch it. So it's an interesting distinction that Tosafot writes over here. We do assume he has hesachadat. That's the problem. He's tahor, but he's no longer a problem touching it. And the owner is still focused on it. The owner is still engaged with it. Even though he gave it over control to him, he's still engaged with it. That's the whole point here. We thought it was a question in our position. Because he relinquished control to someone else, so that Amaretz is not thinking about it. The answer of the Gemara in the end is that he didn't relinquish control. He was mitaher of the Amaretz, and he's still focused on it. And that's what protects the object, is because he's still focused on it. He didn't give up. He didn't really relinquish control because he doesn't trust the Amaretz. With that, we finish the second parak of Chagigah, Adran Allah, Chin Dorshim. Alright, and now we begin the final parak of Chagigah. We got a little introduction to it, but this will put us full steam into the inyanim of Tumah and Tahrah. I said the last couple of Mishnayot, but now the final parak really deals with Tumah and Tahrah, which were major issues on the regel. And that's basically what we're going to get. Everybody shows up in Yerushalayim during the regel, so now you have real issues of Tumah and Tahrah, of interactions between Chaverim and Amei Aretz. What happens during the regel? And that's really what they're addressing. Now, Chomer B'Kodesh Mi B'Tumah. There's certain levels of stringencies that we apply to Kodesh that we don't apply to Tumah. Once again, these are all levels de Rabbanan. So these are Chomer B'Kodesh B'Tumah. Number one, Shemat Bilim Kelim B'Tok Kelim L'Tumah. If you have two Kelim that are Tamei, you can put one inside the other and then put it into the Mikveh, and it's Tahor. Midoraita, it works, and it even works for Tumah. The assumption being that as long as they're not tightly fitted together, the water will seep in between them, and it will create a surrounding of the kli by the water, and you have no problem. By Kodesh, above the Kodesh, lo. By Kodesh, we say no, because it's a chumrah. It's an elevation of Kodesh, and we say, even though in all likelihood, it works, by Kodesh, we're machmir, and we say, no, you gotta separate out the kelim. Acharayim v'toch ubeidat svita b'tshuma. The toch is the inside of the utensil. The acharayim is the back, the base, but it's a base that is useful because it has a toch to it as well. It has a inside to it, and so you could flip the kli over and use the other side as well. And the beit tzvita is usually the handle, basically the finger hole or the area that you hold it by. Each of those separately has a toch, has an inside to it, and because of that, each one of them can become tamei. By truma, each one of them remains separate, which is that if one becomes tamei, the others are remain tahor, and each one stands on its own. It's an independent area of the kli. Of a low b'kodesh. By kodesh, that's not true. If one area becomes tamei, the entire kli becomes tamei. All pieces of it become tamei. Again, this is only midrabanan. If the kli becomes into tumah d'oraita, by truma also, if one part of it becomes tamei, the whole thing becomes tamei. This is only in these milot d'rabanan that we separate between it. According to some rishonim as well, we'll see later on, the possibility is that even in tumah d'rabanan, if the major part of the utensil becomes tamei, the toch, the part that is the main use of the kli, if that becomes tamei, even tumah d'rabanan, maybe everything becomes tamei. It might only be when the other subordinate secondary areas become tamei that it doesn't affect the main area. So it depends how you view this about Shumah, but Shumah is different than Kodesh in this way. Kodesh, anything becomes tamei, the whole thing is tamei automatically. Number three, anosei et midras, nosei et Shumah, avalo et Kodesh. Someone who's carrying midras for Zav, so let's pick for instance, he's carrying a sandal of a Zav. Can't a sandal of a Zav? The sandal of a Zav is an avatumah. It's mitamei him. He is now a Rishon the Tumah. He can carry Shumah in his other hand. Now the truth is, he can't carry Truma in his other hand, because if he's a Rishon the Tumah, he's going to make the Truma Tameh. So the case is here, he's not carrying the Truma directly, he's carrying it with something separating between him and the Truma. So say it's in a barrel of some sort. So here he's carrying the sandal, which is an Ava Tumah, he becomes a Rishon the Tumah. If he's carrying a Kli is not affected by a Rishon the Tumah, and therefore the Truma is fine inside the Kli. That we say is fine. But that's not true by Avalodu Geta Kodesh. By Kodesh, we would not allow you to do that. Even though technically it's the same thing, which is that there's no problem of him making the object Tameh, because there's something separating between him and the object. The reason they did this, the Gemara is going to explain to us, it was a Gzeira. Some guy basically did this. He carried around a sandal of a Zav, and he was carrying around a barrel. And then, for whatever reason, he had to put the sandal down, he put it on top of the barrel, and it fell into the barrel and made the whole thing Tameh and ruined all the Kodesh. Since the incident was by Kodesh, they were gozer by Kodesh and not by Truma. So they worried about this issue by Kodesh, they didn't worry about it by Truma. Again, it's a Maisa Shehaya that caused it, but again, it's an elevation of stringency by Kodesh that we do not apply by Truma. Big day, Ochle Truma, Midras the Kodesh. Similar to what we saw before in the previous Mishnayot, that the Begadim, the clothing of people who are eating Truma, are Midras. Midras means that they have the classification of an Ava Truma, for people who eat Kodesh. Lo, kimidata Kodesh, midata Truma. And the midah of Kodesh is different than Truma because, shibi Kodesh, matir, uminagave, umadbil. In order to put Kodesh into the mikveh to make it tahor, matir, you have to release all knots. Anything that's knotted or tied, you have to release it before you put it in the mikveh. Number two is, if it's wet, you have to be minagave. You have to dry it off in order to make sure that it is completely dry before you put it into the mikveh, and then you're matbilit, Then you put it into the mikveh, v'achacha kosher. And then after it's in the mikveh, you can tie it back up, you can do whatever you want with it. So that is for Kodesh. Those are the requirements of Kodesh. And the reason that you would do this, the knot, is because we're afraid it's a chatzitza when the knot is tight and the water won't get in there. The case by when it's wet is that when a clothing is wet, it sticks together, it folds. So it feels like a chatzitza because the clothing is tight, is together, is folded, or the water causes it to snag, whatever it is that the moisture in the clothing causes. Therefore, it's like a chatzitza for the mikveh. So by Chodesh, we make you undo all these things. We make you undo the knots, and we make you dry it off. Betruma, you can be kosher, v'achar kach matbil. You can tie the knot, and then put it in the mikveh. Obviously, you don't have to tie the knot, but you can, if you so choose, you can tie the knot, or if there is a knot, you don't have to untie it. Because the assumption is the water can get in there, as long as it's not very thin or narrow strings. We assume that the water can get in there, it's not a problem. In terms of the chatzitza, and the same would be true if it was moist, you would not have to dry it, you could put it in the mikveh straight. Number six is, kelim anigmarim b'tara. Kelim that were finished when they were tor, tzrichim tvila l'kodesh, avalo l'tshuma. You finished up a kli, and the uman, the craftsman, says that when I finished it, I made sure that it was tahor. Prior to that point in time, it makes no difference because it's not gemar kli, it's not mekabel tuma. So only at the gemar kli does it become relevant, and he says, I finished the kli b'tara. So even though he says he finished the kli b'tara, for kodesh, you gotta put in the mikveh anyway. For tshuma, you do not have to do that. You don't have to put in the mikveh. It's assumed to be tahor. So with regards to these first six items, the Gemara will later on tell us that this is true both by Kodesh and Chulin Shenasu Atarat HaKodesh. It's true for both of those. The remaining Milot that are in the Mishnah are only by Kodesh, not Chulin Shenasu Atarat HaKodesh, which are number seven. A clay mitzareif mashi b'tocho de Kodesh avalo de Chuma. A clay that has disparate objects in it, has many objects in it. As far as Kodesh is concerned, they're considered to be one object. Therefore, if one of them becomes Tameh, the entirety becomes Tameh. So even though you have separate items that are in there, if you touch one of them, they all become Tameh. For Truma, Avalo B'Truma, Truma, if you touch one of them, whatever that level of Tuma is, let's call it, it became a Rishon the Tuma, the next one next to it is a Sheni the Tuma, the one after that is a Shlishi the Tuma, and then you're done. The whole thing is not Tameh, because they're not considered to be one object. So the Kli is Mitzareif, them, we'll see that in the Gemara, learns it out from the Pasha Nasok, Kaf Achat, Zahav, that the Kaf makes everything into one, Achat, makes it into one object. So by Kodesh, the utensil makes it into a single object. That is not true by Truma. Number eight, Harivii b'Kodesh pasul v'Shlishi b'Truma. When do you reach the end of the line for Tuma? By Kodesh, a Revi'i the Tuma is pasul. Meaning that's the end of the line. It's pasul because that's the last level of Tuma. There is no Chamishi the Tuma. By Truma, that's not the case. By Truma, the end of the line is Shlishi. Shlishi is pasul b'Truma because it would no longer convey Tuma. When it comes to a shlishi by truma. Ubi truma, imni tmeit, this is number nine, imni tmeit achat miyadav. If one of his hands became tamei midrabanan, there's some sort of tuma midrabanan, chaverta tora, the other hand remains tor. Ubi kodesh, in kodesh, if one of them became tamei, matbil shtehen. He has to put both of them into the mikveh, sheyad mitameit chaverta b'kodesh. One hand is metame the other hand in Kodesh, avalo b'truma. So as long as one of your hands is tamei mituma derabanan, the other hand is automatically tamei by Kodesh. By truma, that is not the case. The other difference happens to be that by Kodesh, you would have to put them into the mikveh, you have to dip them into the mikveh, whereas by truma, you can wash netilat yadayim to get rid of the tuma. That's implied here, because it says by Kodesh matbil. It says you have to do tvila by the Kodesh, by truma, you also do not need to do tvila. Number 10 is, Ochlim neguvim biyadayim misuvot b'truma. The half a meaning of the Gemara is, we're talking about ochlim that are dry. Since they are dry, they are not hukshar the kabel tuma. They were never primed. They were never ready to accept tuma. So therefore, even if you have yadayim misuvot, which are yadayim that are tamei midrabanan, they don't affect the object because they were never mukshar the kabel tuma. So that's what this suggestion is here. Ochlim neguvim, you can eat items that are never mukshar the kabel tuma. B'yadayim misuvot b'truma. When your hands are tamei mituma derabanan, when it comes to truma. Avalo b'kodesh. By kodesh, that's not true. We would force you to wash your hands first or be matvil your hands first before you touch the object, even though the object can't accept tuma. Nevertheless, this is a maila that is associated with kodesh. Even stam yadayim are shein the tuma, and that would cause you the same problem. But because it wasn't mukshar the kabel tuma, we assume there's no problem, even by stam yadayim of shein the tuma. All right, so the Gemara is going to reject this and say it's so pashut. that you can do this, because what's the havmi that you can't do it? There's no reason you can't do it. It's not mukshar lekabel tuma. There's nothing to talk about. So Gemara is going to reread this into a case, depends, machloket Rashi and the Rambam about what they reread it to, but they basically reread it to a case where he ate truma, and then he had chulin that was mukshar, and he touched the chulin, whether he can eat the chulin at the same time he eats the truma. So a much more complex case, but the Gemara is going to move. I'm just giving you the havmi of the Gemara, what the Mishnah is saying here. We'll get to in the Gemara how they reread it. The last one, number 11, is va'onain. Someone who was an onain. An onain is someone between the time period where the niftar passed away and the time that they are buried. In that period of time, there's all likelihood is that they came into contact with the mate. We assume that they're tamei tumat mate because they engaged with the mate. The reason they're an onain is because they are taking care of the mate. Umechusar kipurim. Someone who became tahor, but has yet to bring his korbanot. Until he brings his korbanot, he cannot engage in kodesh. He can't go into the mikdash, he can't eat kodeshim. So that person is what's called mechusar kipurim. That's someone on the seventh day who went to the mikveh. The sun set on the seventh day, that makes him completely tahor. He can eat truma now, he can eat anything he wants, except for kodesh. Until on the eighth day, he brings his korbanot. So he's a mechusar kipurim when he didn't bring his korbanot. In both these cases, v'ayinonein mechusar kipurim, tzrichim tefillah the kodesh. If they want to engage in Kodesh, they need a tefillah. That means after you bring your korbanot on the eighth day, you have to go to the mikveh again. Even though you're completely tahor at this point, you went to the mikveh, you had your sun set on you, and now you brought your korbanot, you are completely tahor midoraita. Nevertheless, we make you go to the mikveh again, because in that interim stage, you weren't careful about Kodesh. Because you were careful about truma now, because you became tahor l'truma. But since you couldn't eat Kodesh yet, maybe you forgot, or maybe you let something slide, and therefore we make you go to the mikveh again to remind you that you have to get tahor for kodesh. To re-engage you with focusing on kodesh, you have to go to the mikveh again. Same thing with onein. Even though the onein knows for sure he didn't engage, he didn't touch a mate, nevertheless, unbeknownst to him, maybe he came into contact. An onein is asur be kodesh, he's asur be maser. He's actually an asur be maser, and kodesh is not asur be truma, as long as he didn't become tamet. If he didn't become tamei, he could eat truma all along, but he cannot eat kodesh. So as soon as he becomes mutar to eat kodesh again, then he's got to go to the mikveh to re-engage with the kodesh. So again, this is a maile by kodesh that does not apply to truma, and this is the 11 items that the Mishnah gives here that distinguish kodesh from truma in these mailot derabanan. Again, the Gemara is going to discuss each one of these items, and we'll get into more detail about each of them. Okay, we'll stop over here in the Gemara on the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph.